Welcome back to the Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. This is Lester Spence. I'm guest hosting for Mark. And in our first hour, we talked about the DOJ report dealing with race, class, gender, and the violence that kind of the police represent. What we'd like to do for the next 20 minutes or so is actually shift the conversation to talk about kind of the complementary aspect, talking about Flint, Michigan. For those of you who, pretty much everybody knows that Flint has been dealing with an environmental crisis of massive proportions as a result of specific public policy. And today, or within the last couple of days, the federal government has actually lifted its state of emergency. And what I wanted to do was talk about kind of the state of Flint and what that act actually means for Flint and other cities like it. I'm joined by Brenton Mock. Brenton Mock is a staff writer for CityLab.com, and also joined by John Patrick Leary. John Patrick Leary is an assistant professor of Wayne State University, the English department. Thank you guys for coming on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for having me on.
So, John, I'll start with you. Could you talk a little bit about this? What's going on in Flint now and what this state of emergency means?
Well, the lifting of the state of emergency removes the federal government from immediate participation and immediate financial responsibility for the ongoing crisis and for the mitigation of the health effects, and also of the more longer term issue of replacing lead pipes and the lead service lines in the city. The fear, of course, is that returning authority, especially financial authority over the situation, to the very legislative bodies and governor who oversaw it in the first place is, I think, rightfully frightening to a lot of people in Flint.
Brenton, would you like to step in?
Yeah, I agree. The main thing that needs to be remembered here, I guess, is that there are still investigations that are sorting out the federal government's own complicity in creating the environmental disaster that happened in Flint. In fact, there are calls from a number of environmental groups, environmental justice groups, calling for the Justice Department to do a Title VI Civil Rights Act investigation into what happened with Flint, in particular, whether EPA did all that it was supposed to do to protect the rights of the black and, you know, the people of color who live in Flint. That all said, anytime the federal government intervenes, it's bringing a cradle of resources that cities otherwise don't have. Especially a small kind of, a small city like Flint, to contend with these kinds of issues. And so, I think in a lot of people's minds, it's still very much an emergency going on there. And what's important is that the federal government is held accountable for all of its, all that it's supposed to be doing there.
Now, John, we've been talking on the show for a while now about some of the challenges of kind of the neoliberal turn, that is kind of treating the turn where we're consistently treating everything kind of like it needs to be, it needs to perform like a business. Talk a little mm-hmm. bit about how that idea kind of generates the Flint crisis.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the real background to the whole crisis. Beyond the engineering questions and the science of lead and plumbing, I mean, when, you know, economic viability becomes the mandate for every kind of public policy, and when economic competitiveness, efficiency, and all these kind of terms and concepts become the means by which we measure and evaluate political decisions, then catastrophes like Flint are the result you should expect. I mean, the emergency management in Flint, as well as other cities in Michigan, and the move to leave the Detroit water system to go to this kind of new regional water system. These were sound business decisions. They were competitive, efficient business decisions, but they were disastrous political decisions. I don't mean political in the sense of, you know, Rick Snyder's electoral prospects or whatever, but mm-hmm. a political decision in terms of, you know, what politics is supposed to do, care for, protect, and democratically represent the citizenry of a particular place. And so when you think about organizing a society in the terms with which you run and organize a business, then people become products, they become widgets, they become discardable, and they become irrelevant. And Flint is evidence of that. You know, it's a city that was built the auto industry, that built General Motors, and General Motors has, generally speaking, abandoned it. And so what's the economic motive to continue to protect the people of Flint? Well, I don't know if there is one, but there's certainly a moral one, and there should be a democratic one.
So those are great points. The one area I push back a little bit is I just note that the economic cost, let's just take the human life cost, but the economic cost is so great, it doesn't even seem to me it was a good business decision.
Yeah, well, you also can't discount the fact that some of these people are fools, you know, don't know what they're doing. and so incompetence and a business mindset don't necessarily contradict each other.
So the federal government lifts the state of emergency, and all that really means is kind of like a deadline. It's like as soon as a specific date hits, the federal government just lifts it, and that means that the state's now responsible and the federal government's no longer on the hook for it.
Right.
But the Michigan has a Republican governor, and both houses are of the state government are run by Republicans, conservative Republicans. Mm-hmm. What's the likelihood that Flint going forward will get the resources it needs given the political context?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty skeptical that they will, you know, for the reasons you just stated. I mean, and then there have been some kind of discouraging sounds out of the state legislature in the last few months about the state's ongoing fiscal crisis, which, you know, is always exacerbated by the corporate tax cut economic policy that's been the sort of centerpiece of Rick Snyder's governorship. One of the first things he did, one of the things he's most proud of. And so in light of that kind of state fiscal crisis, there's people in the state legislature are making sounds about how, you know, this is not a blank check. Well, that was something they originally said, that state appropriations to address the Flint water crisis originally were not a blank check, as if, you know, people in Flint were coming with their hands out.
Yeah.
And so given the cost, the ongoing cost, especially of eventually replacing lead service lines, and given what a long-term project that is, as the crisis fades from the headlines, you know, I'm pretty fearful it will disappear from the legislature too.
Brent, do you want to chime in?
I'm sorry. What was the question?
Yeah. So given the political context, you know, what's the likelihood? So you know what? I'll ask a different question. So I'm from Detroit. I go back several times a year. And so I'm deeply connected to what goes on there. The thing that was most heartening, but also most disheartening, was the number of folk from home, and actually even from here in Baltimore, whose primary political response was sending water to Flint. Right. Mm-hmm. So what type of sending water to Flint? They need water, but that further kind of suggests that if it further takes us away from the idea that the Flint issue isn't a matter of a charity issue. The Flint issue is a political issue and needs to be solved through political means. What type of work has there been done on the ground in Flint and in other places to kind of keep the heat on the state government in order to make sure that they try to do the right thing?
Well, I think one of the things that we learned from the Flint disaster in terms of political disaster was the egregious level of disenfranchisement that existed in Flint, namely from the handing over of the city to the fiscal emergency managers, you know, which essentially stripped all of the people in the city of, you know, having any say in decisions, given that the city council members and their mayors were, you know, their powers were usurped by the emergency manager who was appointed by the state governor. And so I think when you look across, say, Michigan as a whole, there were Flint wasn't the only city that was placed under emergency management. There were many other cities, and I think the data bears out that the cities that were placed under emergency management were disproportionately predominantly Black.
Every city under financial management with a minority Black population. Yeah.
Right, and that's not to say that only minority cities were the ones that were dealing with fiscal insolvency. There were many other white jurisdictions that also were facing fiscal insolvency, but, you know, they did not get the same kind of dictatorship imposed upon them. So I think right now, you know, there's definitely a lot of, I mean, you look at the lawsuits, and there's dozens of them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are specifically focused on looking at that emergency management structure and reforming that. When you look at the task force report from the commission appointed by Governor Rick Snyder to do, you know, to look into the Flint emergency and the Flint disaster as a whole, one of their main recommendations was for you know, the state to reconsider its emergency management provisions. I haven't looked at it recently, but I think when I looked at it a month ago, the governor was kind of gloating that he had already had something in place to meet something like 80%, 70-80% of the recommendations made by that commission. But one of the pieces that he did not have something in place for was that reconsideration or reform of the emergency management structure.
Yeah.
And Lester, can I just say
that
question about the politics of the whole situation? I mean, I remember, too, you know, in the buildings I taught in at Wayne State, above each water fountain, there was a little poster that said, you know, donate water for Flint. I had the same kind of response that you did about it being treated as a sort of charity case, where we, with all of our water, our abundant water that we can get out of the water fountain, should be sharing a little bit with our poor neighbors up the road. And on the politics of it, I think you also can't lay the blame exclusively on the Republican administration. That is to say,
oh, that's right.
You know, Rick Snyder bears all the responsibility you want to give him and all the scorn you want to give him, I think, for what has happened. But, you know, it could have easily happened in Benton Harbor. Something comparable could have easily happened in Pontiac, and we'd be talking about Jennifer Granholm's responsibility. And so the emergency manager question and the broader questions of defunding and disenfranchising majority Black populations of post-industrial cities, that's a bipartisan, as we say, issue.
I think that's absolutely right. Final question, and we'll this less than a minute, and I'll ask this to John. Has there been any attempt that you're aware of for, you know, we talked in the first hour about policing. Has there been any attempt to kind of bridge the organizing around policing to organizing around the Flint crisis? John, are you still there?
Oh, yeah. Are you addressing me?
Yeah. 30 seconds, I know.
Well, I'm not on the ground in Flint in particular, so I really can't comment on what the activists there are doing. So,
what about Detroit?
I wouldn't want to.
Yeah. So that's fair. So, what about Detroit?
In Detroit,
yeah.
Well, I know that there's a kind of new mobilization around a new Black Lives Matter group that's trying to, you know, address some of the political terms of the kind of policy sort of manifesto that has come out in the last week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's some effort in that regard. I don't know if it addresses the Flint case in particular.
Yeah, I think I think the challenge going forward is to figure out how we connect stories that deal with kind of the long-term slow death, economic violence, and examples like Flint with the very discreet acts of police murder that happened in cities like Baltimore and Ferguson. Thank you so much. John Patrick Leary, Assistant Professor, Wayne State University Department of English. Brent Mock, Staff Writer for CityLab.com. The work you guys are doing on this Flint issue is incredibly important, and we hope to continue to point the lens there. We're going to take a two-minute break, and after we come back, Booth Stories with Michelle Antoine Nelson, a.k.a. Love the Poet.